This is my island in the sun, where my fever has gone since I have begun. I may sail on many seas, the shore will always be home to me.
Marijuana, I love it, my brother.
Hello, you're listening to the Anoraks on Shoreditch Radio with Tom Bonnet and Alex Bernard. Our usual cohort Alex Lawson can't be with us today, but he sent some material over for this very special show. Today, we're going to be looking back at one of the most influential labels in the world, Trojan Records.
Yes, since its inception in 1967, Trojan has put out the finest Jamaican sounds, from rocksteady and early reggae, all the way through to dancehall and jungle. And, helping us plot our potted history of the label, will be Earl Gateshead, the selector at the helm of the mighty Trojan sound system that's touring the world today.
But the story begins with another Trojan sound system, set up by a former policeman named Arthur Duke Reed. Reed, born in 1915 in Jamaica, had spent 10 years as a Kingston policeman when he and his wife, Lucille, after winning a substantial Jamaican national lottery, decided to buy the Treasure Isle liquor store in Kingston, Jamaica. Wanting music to attract customers, the Duke arranged through a sponsorship deal to host his own radio show, Treasure Isle Time. The people would listen to the latest American R&B tunes on 78 RPM speed, interspersed with liquor deals going down at his store. This, in time, would lead to the starting of his own sound system, where he could take his liquor to the dances via his Trojan truck. He used a Lars van to transport this equipment around Jamaica to dance halls and open-air events. Due to the nature of the van, it became known as the Trojan, with shouts of, "Here comes the Trojan!" Duke Reed's now-named Trojan sound system was born. It proved such a success that he was crowned King of Sound and Blues 3 years in a row, in the years 1956, 1957 and 1958. 1958 also saw the store, which was outgrowing itself, move to its legendary premises, 33 Bond Street. He began producing his own records, some of which are regarded as some of the finest of the ska and rocksteady eras, and these caught the attention of Chris Blackwell and Lee Gopthall from Island Records. They were so impressed they created Trojan purely to put out Reed's work.
All manner of person or persons have anything to do or say in this court, let him draw near and he shall be heard. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah.
My name is Judge Sympathy. Officer, call the accused. Call them singular.
Call them singular. Call them singular. Call them singular.
Call them one by one.
Call them one by one. Call them one by one.
Officer, call them by name.
Udelovin, present. Uselakwin,
present.
You are brought here for maintenance.
Who means that?
Yes,
means
that's what you say. I don't business, I don't business, I don't business. You must give her enough wood to make her comfortable in her kitchen. Yes, you must also give her water until the child is old enough to carry her own water. This court stands adjourned.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. This court stands adjourned.
Chris Blackwell and Lee Gopthall's Trojan Records released a dozen or more tracks by Duke Reed, but as quickly as it had come to prominence, Trojan looked set to vanish into the history books when it folded after just 6 months. Then, in 1968, Trojan was resurrected by Lee Gopthall, whose company, BNC, had merged with Island. The label had a new remit and began showcasing material by British artists such as Dandy and Joe Manzano, and released work by Jamaican musicians that would go down in history as some of the most esteemed artists to come out of the island. They included Lee Perry, Bunny Lee, and the aforementioned Duke Reed. The colossal amount of recordings being purchased and licensed by the company led to the formation of a series of subsidiary labels, most of which showcased the output of a single producer. These included Amalgamated for Joe Gibbs, High Note for Sonia Pottinger, Upsetter for Lee Perry, Jackpot for Bunny Lee, Clan Disc for Clancy Eccles, and Downtown for Robert Dandy Thompson. So much material was licensed that further labels such as Blue Cat, Big Shot and Duke were also created, issuing recordings from an array of producers. Over the following year or so, 30 different labels under the Trojan umbrella were launched. From that era, this is Dennis Walks with Drifter. In 1969, Trojan got its first taste of mainstream success with Red Red Wine.
Red, red wine, pour to my head.
Red Red Wine, in which the singer finds drinking red wine is the only way to forget a lost love, was originally released by Neil Diamond in 1968. And reached 63 on the US Billboard Hot 100 chart. Jamaican rocksteady singer Tony Tribe recorded a version the following year, which peaked at 46 in the UK singles chart. Rather than proving a one-off success, the record in fact marked the beginning of a deluge of hits for Trojan and its associated labels. In the autumn, the Upsetters, led by saxophonist Val Bennett, hit the number 5 spot with their doubleheader Return of the Django, Dollar in the Teeth, while Pioneer's Long Shot Kick the Bucket peaked at number 21. These were swiftly followed by top 10 singles from Jimmy Cliff, Wonderful World, Beautiful People, and the Harry J All-Stars with Liquidator, which we're going to play for you now. Into the 1970s. Desmond Dekker, who had previously recorded polite, respectable songs such as The Israelites, then appeared on Derek Morgan's Tougher Than Tough, a record which began a trend of songs glamorising the violent Rude Boy culture. Dekker introduced lyrics that chimed with the Rude Boys in his song 007 Shantytown. Although the words were not as extreme as those of some of his contemporaries, Dekker became a Rude Boy icon on the island, and the track, released by Trojan, reached number 15 in the UK charts. Trojan also had hits by The Melodians with Rivers of Babylon, Toots and the Maytals' Monkey Man, as well as tracks from Bob and Marcia, Nicky Thomas, Horace Faye, Freddie Notes and the Rudies, and the aforementioned Jimmy Cliff. Here is a track from Jimmy Cliff called The Good Old Days.
So fresh and free.
The Anoraks on Shoreditch Radio, and in a special show today we're looking back at the history of the eponymous record label Trojan Records. We've just had Jimmy Cliff with his track The Good Old Days, and we're up to 1971 in the history of Trojan, in which Double Barrel by Dave Barker and Ansel Collins gave the company their first British number one.
I am the magnificent. I'm back with the shaker of a soul, boss, most thundering, storming, sound of soul. I am W-O-O-O, and I'm still here again.
Further chart entries were provided by Bruce Ruffin, Greyhound, and The Pioneers. Aside from more commercially successful releases, Trojan also showcased work from an array of artists previously considered virtual unknowns outside the shores of Jamaica. Among these were a number of performers who were later to become major international recording stars, including Dennis Brown, U-Roy, Bob Marley and the Wailers, and Gregory Isaacs, who sang this track, Love Overdue.
Gonna hold and squeeze me tight. Now that she's gone out of my life, who's gonna make me feel the way she used to do? Yeah, now that my love is overdue. Now that my love is overdue. I'm all alone in the wilderness, searching to find some peace and rest. Although she wasn't the best girl, but she brought happiness into my world. And now I'm a prisoner of loneliness. Said I'm a prisoner of loneliness. She's gonna say goodnight. Now that she's gone out of my sight, who's gonna tell me lies and let me think they're true? Yeah, now that my love is overdue. Now that my love is overdue. Can you see right now? And I don't know just what to do, yeah. Won't you please stop from making me blue, girl? Cause I'll give my love to you. La da 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 da.
The dramatic rise in the company's fortune since its humble beginnings just a year or so before was phenomenal. While its incredible success could certainly be credited in some part to the British West Indian expatriate community in the UK, it was undoubtedly the buying power of the white and proudly working class youth movement, called the Skinheads, which had the most profound effect. Where before it had been the mods and their buying power, allied with the West Indian population within the UK. By 1969, the music had changed and become that much more appealing to white working class listeners. It was good timing, as reggae was perfect for the skinhead attitude, as it was music that was free from all the pretensions of mainstream pop and rock. Even soul was becoming slightly psychedelic with the band The Temptations, and the skinheads felt alienated by that as well. So suddenly, here was a no-nonsense dance music which totally fitted the skinhead sensibility. Unable to identify with either the teen-based style of bubblegum or the psychedelic sound so favoured by the middle classes, skinheads found the direct, unpretentious approach of reggae in keeping with their lifestyle and attitudes, and readily adopted the music as their own. But as reggae became more mainstream and popular, Trojan's releases developed a more sophisticated sound, which although initially proved successful, ultimately led to the disenchantment of the music's loyal skinhead following.
For the skinheads, it was the rawness that appealed. But this sound meant reggae was not getting on the radio, even though it was selling. The pirates would play tracks, but stations such as the BBC just weren't interested. So reggae producers began trying to make the songs as appealing to radio stations as possible. For example, when Harry J first came to the UK, he had a record called Young, Gifted and Black by Bob and Marcia, their version of a Nina Simone song. The decision was taken to add strings to the recording. The strings added a new dimension to the track, and producers began using the technique on more and more songs. Reggae was developing a poppy sensibility, and as it did so, it began to appeal less to the skinheads and more to their mums and aunts.
Over the next few years, Trojan released more UK chart hits, with further singles by Dandy Livingstone, Judge Dredd and John Holt all getting into the top 30, while Ken Booth's soulful rendering of Bread's Everything I Own gave the company its second UK number one. Meanwhile, back in Jamaica, the sound of reggae was changing. Increasingly apparent was the rise in black consciousness and the growing influence of the Rastafarian faith. In sync with change was the advent of dub, which was also beginning to make its mark, with the pioneering sound engineer King Tubby, real name Osborne Ruddock, continually furthering the boundaries of the sound with his innovative mixing style. Tubby turned the mixing desk into an instrument, and the wizardry of his effects would take the tune to another plane. He had worked as an electronics engineer and, motivated by his love of music, built and owned the Hometown Hi-Fi sound system. Although not in the same league as Downbeat, which was Coxon Sound, or Trojan Sound Systems, Hometown soon gained notoriety and is celebrated for having launched the career of the legendary DJ, U-Roy. King Tubby also worked as the master cutter for Arthur Duke Reed, who ran the Trojan Sound System. Legend has it that King Tubby took one experimental acetate to a Hometown dance and played the original Treasure Isle cut before dropping his remix dub plate. As you would expect, the crowd went wild. This unsurprisingly resulted in Tubby's sound becoming extremely popular and kick-started a revolution in the sound system movement. Here is one of King Tubby's many, many releases, and it's called Youth Man.
In 1975, Trojan was sold to Saga Records, and despite a number of worthwhile releases, sustained commercial success proved elusive. Despite this, the company continued to present some of the best in Jamaican sounds, showcasing the work of leading vocalists, including Limbaugh Thompson and Sugar Minot, DJs such as the late Prince Farai, and leading dubmasters Scientist and Prince Jammy. 10 years on, the company changed hands yet again, and its new owners embarked on an extensive reissue programme, with the imprint quickly becoming established as world leaders in the field of vintage Jamaican sounds. Today, Trojan continues to re-release large chunks of its back catalogue, to the annoyance of some collectors who spent years accumulating the originals. However, surprises still crop up, and 2011 saw the release of a historically important reggae track by Toots and the Maytals. The band recorded a song called Do the Boogaloo, but at the last minute, the track was changed to be called Do the Reggae, which led to the genre getting its name. This shows there's still plenty of secret treasures in the Trojan vaults. The label also runs events around the world, and Alex and I spoke with Earl Gateshead, who runs the Trojan Sound System. He told us how he got into reggae and what it's like playing under the Trojan name.
I saw my first sound system in Bradford in about 1980-81, and I loved it. I didn't even know what it was. You know, I don't come from a sound system, particularly reggae background. I was into ska and reggae, but when I saw my first sound system, I just loved it in about 1980, and I went back home and built one according to what I thought it was. I just built huge speakers, actually, massive speakers like tanks, and started. I didn't even know it was a sound system. I just did it because I wanted to do it. And then I was approached by another a proper sound system who actually were connected to West Indians, which I wasn't. I'd just seen West Indians doing it and thought, that's brilliant. And done it myself. And then I was approached by a West Indian sort of bass sound. And I joined it up with them, and we had a sound system, which we were probably, there was a lot of us white, we were probably the first white sound system virtually in the world, I would have thought, because nobody else was doing it. It was totally uncool and were completely ignored by all the media. We just used to go around West Indian centres. We were contemporaries of Three Stripe and the people who became Massive Attack. But we were in Soul to Soul, but we were earlier than them.
Were you accepted by the black audiences straight away?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, they didn't think. I mean, Jamaicans in particular love it when white people play reggae and are into reggae. They see it as a validation of their culture. You know, there's no dodginess at all. It's, you know, it's just like, it's like being a footballer. You know, who cares if you're black or white? Just because football was invented in England.
What about on the other? This is Alex here. What about on the other side? The authorities. How did they? You know, because
we constant battles and struggles.
Right.
Yeah, constant. Absolutely. Not just the authorities, club promoters. I mean, I got sick of trying to play in clubs and them saying, you play reggae, you bring too many blacks in. Used to get that all the time. Sounds terrible now. I mean, it is terrible, but it was a normal thing to say in the 80s. The world's changed a bit. But yeah, you bring too many blacks in without reggae. I'd get a lot of that. And even, so, you know, we'd set the sound up somewhere and the police would just turn up before it would even strung up, you know. They'd be frightened of the speakers. They'd see the huge speakers set up in a park or somewhere. The police would be there. And then we started squatting places. And look, you could tell you know, you'd be setting up anyway, even legally, you'd be setting up and the police would arrive and search you for weed just because some of us were dread. And
so with the people getting into reggae at that time, when we were speaking to you before the interview, we were asking about the sort of records that had been really influential that had come from Trojan. Was there a particular Trojan record that sort of really everybody associated with at the time that really made those dances?
Trojan wasn't particularly underground. People loved Trojan. And that's another thing. When you talk about Trojan, you've got to remember Trojan was, by and large, a licensing label. So they would license records that had already been released in Jamaica. They weren't actually, they didn't do much recording, not like Ireland. They would just, they would take a record that had been done all right in Jamaica, the people of Trojan, and then license it for England and probably change it a bit, put strings on it. It was a crossover label, really. It's not really a deep underground label. It's a label to explain reggae to the general public.
But do you think it had a good impact on the scene in the UK, or do you think it hindered?
Yeah, massive impact, and then it spread reggae. It brought reggae to England, to Europe, really. I mean, it brought reggae to Europe, but that's no other way of putting it. I mean, they picked records well, and they felt they had to add strings a lot, which is what. But sometimes they'd rearrange the reggae records to get the masters and rearrange them, often adding strings, which isn't very reggae. But it's hard to say if it worked out. And sometimes I think they're better. Their stuff is better than the original, other names, I think it's softened the original a bit. But you take a record, I'd say a record like Everything I Own by Ken Booth, which was number one in England, is a perfect reggae record. Everything about it is perfect.
Mm.
It still sounds perfect now. Anybody can like it. You don't have to like reggae to like that. From its starts, you're going to like it. You know, as soon as... And that's what Trojan did. It brought out records that everybody liked, everybody could like.
So as a DJ representing Trojan, is that kind of your job? Do you feel like you should be playing records
that
people
when
like?
I work on my own, as Earl Gates said, I'll play a lot deeper and a lot more specific, a lot more for the reggae heads. But when I'm working with Trojan, yeah, I do feel that. I feel like we play festival crowds. Say we go to a festival or whatever, and I want them to know that, like, a lot of people can't get into reggae, would really love to get into it, but can't sort of find a way in. And I like to try to show them a way in, show them the way it's, you know, it can be first-class entertainment, great fun, great party music.
Excellent.
But serious as well.
So, Earl, I was reading an interview with you recently, and it was almost an accident that you got into playing records because you found it so hard to find a DJ to play at your nights. When was that? What year was that?
1979, 1980.
Excellent. So what sort of stuff are you playing then?
Well, I was playing a bit of ska, a bit of roots. I was playing stuff like Toots,
yeah,
and a bit of roots. And a bit of jazzy stuff, like James Blood Oldman was cool at the time, and sort of jazzy, funky stuff.
Very nice.
Would
you say your taste has changed over the years, or are you still playing that sort of stuff?
No, my taste changes every 6 months, really.
Right, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just the way it is with music.
Sure.
And I've been doing it a long time, as I said, since 79, 80. So I appreciate how much... I mean, to tell you the truth, Alex, I think I may have DJed more than anybody in the world.
Really? Fantastic.
I honestly think that. I started then, and I played at the dive bar for 10 hours a week.
10 hours a week?
Oof. Yeah, for 22 years. And I've never ever, and even now I DJ, usually I'm DJing in front of people up to 15 hours a week. And I think... And I've never, ever stopped since I started. So I can't see how anybody can have DJed more than me.
I mean, so it's your passion then? It's your passion?
Yeah, it's my passion. I love doing it. It's true. I think, it's like painting or anything. You create an ambience. You create an impression in people's mind. You create a feeling in people's minds. And... that's what I'm not saying I'm an artist in the major sense of the word, but I think whenever you induce a feeling in people, that's what art's about, and that's why I enjoy it. I enjoy that I can make people feel something, and I usually can, and reggae is a fantastic medium for inspiring people.
That was Earl Gateshead talking to the Anoraks from Shoreditch Radio for our Trojan special. And here is the track that he thinks is the most perfect reggae track. It is Ken Booth's Everything I Own.
You sheltered me from harm, kept me warm, kept me warm. You gave my life to me. I would give anything
That was Ken Booth with Everything I Own on the Anorak's Trojan special. We mentioned at the start of the show that Alex Lawson, the third Anorak, wasn't able to record with us, but he's managed to send over a piece on his favourite reggae artist, Louisa Marx. So we're going to leave you with that piece from Alex and then a tune from the woman herself.
Louisa Marx was a fascinating and fractious vocalist, known for both her prodigious vocal stylings and her furious temper, something that was to hamper her during a difficult career. Marx was arguably the queen of lovers rock, a subgenre of reggae noted for its romantic sound and content. While love songs have been an important part of reggae since the late 1960s, the style was given a greater focus and a name in London in the mid-1970s. Louisa the Marx Woman Mark was born in Kensal Rise, London, on the 11th of January 1960 to Grenadian immigrant parents. Her father was a builder and her mother later a care assistant, and she grew up in Shepherd's Bush. She had her introduction to the music business initially by working as a guest vocalist on Dennis Bavell's Sufferer sound system, followed by a residency at the Metro Club in Westbourne Park. While attending Hammersmith County Secondary School, aged just 14, the rival sound system owner, Lloydie Coxon, invited Mark to enter Star Search, a weekly talent contest held at the Four Aces nightclub in Dalston. There, she won first prize 10 weeks in a row. That November, Coxon brought her into Gooseberry Studios with Bavell's band Matumbe to record a reggae rendition of Caught You in a Lie, an old R&B hit. This did very well, and in 1977 she joined the revamped Trojan label, working closely with the producer Clem Boucher and the songwriter and arranger Joseph Tunga Charles of the band Zabandis. This collaboration yielded the hit song Keep It Like It Is. Mark later left the company to work for Boucher's newly formed eponymous label, issuing a version of Michael Jackson's Even Though You're Gone, and another broken-hearted Charles original, 6th Street. This topped the reggae charts and helped her win Artist of the Year at the 1978 Reggae Awards. After the release of People in Love the next year, Mark retreated from the music scene for another extended period. She collaborated with Boucher and Charles again in the early 1980s, but was disappointed by the shape of her debut album, Breakout, which she felt was released before it had been properly completed. She recorded only sporadically from the mid-1980s, as she was wary of the music industry and, because of her legendary temper, made producers reluctant to work with her. Although Mark's output was not prolific, and her relations with Trojan sometimes strained, her significance in the history of the label's development cannot be underestimated. Several of her recordings were immensely popular, and the creation of Lovers Rock gave British audiences seeking an alternative from the predominant political protest of Jamaican roots reggae a real option. Her early triumphs paved the way for the success of like-minded peers such as Carol Thompson, Janet Kay, and Deborah Glasgow. In October 2009, 6 years after she settled in Gambia, Dotun Adebayo reported on his BBC London show that Mark had died of poisoning in Gambia. Adebayo himself owns property in Gambia and is indeed married to Mark's friend and fellow singer Carol Thompson. On October 20th, 2009, Trojan Records confirmed the story, stating cause of death as a stomach ulcer. After her death, the New Black magazine said of her, "Despite a strained relationship with the industry, Marx's influence on Lovers Rock helped maintain the genre's popularity with its core urban audience in Britain and across the world during the 1990s. While it remained a style that few artists pursued exclusively, it helped other artists such as Maxi Priest score several international hit singles. A true reggae legend, then, and a tragic Trojan loss." You
coming up in the next episode of The Anoraks.
We're the Hackney Comedy Band, and you're listening to The Anoraks
on Shoreditch Radio.
Yes, we'll be talking to the Hackney Colliery Band, a nine-piece brass outfit who do covers of ODB's Baby I Got Your Money, Toto's Africa, and many, many more. They'll be talking to us about which covers and which original tracks they'll be doing on their debut album released next July, the festival season, and Amy Winehouse jumping on stage with them at the Jazz Cafe. We'll be right back.